This is an ABC podcast.
Roots and Shoots with Amber Cunningham and Mark Tuchek on 720 ABC Radio Perth and WA.
Get in early, get in now, 1300 222 720. Mark is here at your disposal, or you can text in 0437 922 720. You have had a busy week.
I have, Amber.
Tell me about it.
I was in Melbourne for the Australian plant trials.
Yes.
And that was super interesting. I saw a robot in a plant propagation area picking out cuttings and pricking them into the tubes. It was amazing.
Oh, wow.
It's so, so clever. I'll show you a little video later on too. And they also announced the plant of the year for next year.
Yes.
So, should I tell you?
Yes.
This is a secret. So the winner was a Corymbia physifolia, which is a gum tree.
Okay.
And its common name, it used to be called red flowering gum, but because they actually come in so many different colours nowadays. They come in whites and pinks and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So this one was a tissue culture version that you can see that there.
Yeah, I've just called it up.
But this one was called Pearl. Oh, I've forgotten the second name. I'll get it in a second. And it's a light white with a pink tinge on it. And it's going to be produced by tissue culture because normally these grafted gum trees were grafted on a rootstock. But they're now grown as tissue culture.
And did you say it was plant of the year? What did you call it?
Yeah, plant of the year.
Okay.
For Australia.
For Australia. Hmm. So it's a whatchamacallit? Precious pearl.
Precious pearl, correct.
Corymbia.
Physifolia.
Physifolia. And how would you describe it's that classic flower that comes out of a gum nut, am I right?
Yes. They're all flowering. They're starting to flower around at the moment for Birak. And you'll notice them down the side of the streets. Lovely big myrtaceae blossoms. Fantastic. And they produce the classic honky nut afterwards.
There you go. So I think people know what we're talking about. And so tissue culture. So things are happening in laboratories with plants. 1-300-222-720. Woo! 1-300-222-720 is the number. It's your direct line to Mark Tuchek, who's just been at the plant trials in Melbourne, which sounds like a very hectic and stressful event. Do you contribute things to that? Plants?
No, we don't. We a lot of growers go there to see what's up and coming.
Okay.
And they see the new things and they program them in. And it's a good chance for a chinwag too, so I caught up with a few growers from around the country that grow the Tuckerbush range, and it's just a great event. You know, it's really interesting.
Sounds amazing. Let's get to some texts. I live on a property in Coolup, and over the last few years, the livestock have been the priority for water, so my poor orchard has suffered. We have now extended our dam, so I'm hoping that I can revive my fruit trees. The citrus are looking particularly sad. I have given them slow-release fertilizer, fruit fertilizer, and a foliar trace element spray. Can you please advise what else I can do, says Penny.
Well, if the water was the situation and she's fixed that, I think that's the main thing because, fruit trees, as you can imagine, they're just full of water. So you've got to have a really good water supply to fruit trees. So putting on extra fertiliser won't make them any better if they're not getting that water. So it sounds like she's doing the right thing. And the fertiliser is fine, so nothing more to do.
Nothing more to do.
No.
Except perhaps dance among the orchard. This correspondent has sent in 5 photographs and just said, my sad citrus trees. So I'm just going to bump through them. And let Mark have a look. And they look a bit dead and woody in the middle there. Would that be a fair description?
Yes, that's right. And it looks...
Oh, this was for the text I just read.
Oh, there we go.
Okay.
All right, that's a bit different then.
Okay.
So, yes, there's obviously been some stress there because they've been burnt in certain sections and they're quite yellow. And, yeah, so you'd want to... In that fertiliser that... she was putting on, you want to make sure there's manganese and iron in there, and they've obviously been burnt at some stage, obviously got very hot very quickly, So that regular watering will be okay. But, yeah, that yellowing is a nutrient deficiency, iron, manganese, and even magnesium. So
it sounds like Penny knows what she's doing, and it's just we're going to say, how long will it take to see the results of that come through?
Usually pretty quickly because of the warm weather. The plants take up the nutrients fairly quickly. So within a couple of months, should be good.
Excellent. Now, Tim in Ardros says, can you tell me if my potted mangoes are going to fruit? Ooh, we got to be fortune tellers.
Yes, and that is a flower spike, and it will fruit with all the little bugs doing the right thing is pollinating them. So as long as that happens, they'll be fine. We've got a friend on the line now. So
do you need to answer that? I'll keep talking. You get that.
Costa's on the phone. He's hung up on me.
He's hung up.
All right.
We will hopefully be speaking to Costa Georgiadis a little later in the show. He's in town. Now we have Zelda in Hamilton Hill. Good morning to you, Zelda.
Oh, good morning.
What's your question, Mark?
Bananas. When to pick them? I hear so many different reports from different cultures. Some people say cut the knob off and then they ripen, and some people say cut them off when they start to colour. And you have to bring them in as soon as. I'm not sure about which way to go with a bunch.
Right. Okay. So bananas will not ripen on the tree. Okay, so you do have to pick them to ripen them, and normally that knob on the end is just the flower the end of the flower. So you don't need to cut that off, but you just wait till the banana hands are big enough and mature enough, and then you chop them off, and then you ripen them inside in a bag or just on the kitchen seat.
Wait until one colours.
They'll slightly colour a little bit, but they won't fully ripen on the plant.
Yes. Oh, that's great. Thanks very much.
No worries.
Good luck with that, Zelda. And 1-300-222-720 is the number to have a chat with Mark. Now, this correspondent, please pop your name on so we can say hi to you. It says, Cape Lilac, which form a lot of our shade on a country, have suddenly shed their leaves and are dying. Interesting. Cape Lilac's dying. Leaf dump. Oh, apparently we've got the caller about this. So let's. That is Moya in 2J. Good morning, Moya.
Hello. This is a spec call, but yes, we live next to the showground, and that's our shade. There are shade trees along the fence, and suddenly, about a fortnight ago, one of them shed all its green leaves, and now it's completely dying, and it looks like it's moving on to the next one. So it's all happened within a couple of weeks.
Les? Because the Cape Lilacs are deciduous, but they're also semi-deciduous before they start to flower as well too. So yours are not just dropping leaves before they flower. Do you know?
No, we've had all the flowers. They're absolutely magnificent, and the birds love them and we love them, but one of them, as I say, within a fortnight, just shed all its green leaves, and now they've all turned yellow, and now the tree looks dead. And it's moving on to another very big one. We can see yellowing up in the tree.
And one of the lower limbs.
I'll put you on to my husband.
Ooh. Hello.
Yes, one
of the lower limbs. Hi. And one of the lower limbs is just starting to brown off and wither. The leaves are just withering.
Right. And what about the stems themselves? Are they still fairly full? If you scratch them, are they green underneath?
That's a good question. I'll go and scratch one.
Yeah. Unless, it wasn't after, Monday's heat event. They'd been doing that before that.
Well and truly, I mean, there's one little one sitting here that's perfectly green. There's this one which is totally looks as though it's dead. However, I'll scratch that one as I speak and see what happens.
Yeah, all I can think of is they've experienced some kind of stress event which can prematurely have their leaves yellow and drop. But they're very resilient trees, to tell you the truth. So if it's been stressed, there's every good chance it'll actually reshoot. So if those stems are green underneath, they should actually reshoot after they've...
I can't see any. Hang on.
He's out there
pretty,
in the wild.
Pretty tough.
Can I make a sinister suggestion?
Sinister.
Yes, sinister. What, yes.
Could they have been poisoned?
Ah. The thought had occurred to us.
Yeah.
The Shire does spray along our fence line, but the roses along the fence line are perfectly fine. So is the jasmine. There's nothing wrong with that.
But are they blocking anyone's view? Because, you know, I am aware of people in certain ritzy areas who have no compunction in poisoning a tree.
No, this is the country.
sorry.
Yes. They're not like that in the country.
I just feel quite told off.
Yeah.
Rightly so.
Nothing bad happens in the country.
They're nice people in
the
country.
Of course not. No. Except their bloody trees die. That's in their country.
Well, all I can suggest is that if you want them to recover, possibly if you kind of water in underneath the drip zone, so however wide the branches are, you draw a line down to the ground, and that's where you kind of water in that area. So all I would do is just suggest putting water, drilling a few holes in the ground, a bit of a wetting agent. Don't fertilise them, but I suspect they should recover. So I don't think they'll go backwards, but without seeing them or seeing if there's green.
No, well, Maya did send you a photo on the text.
Oh.
Okay.
Gosh.
Let me have a look. Oh, is that it there?
Oh, I see.
It's a dead Cape lilac. It's pretty small, is that right?
It's probably 15, 20 feet high.
Yeah, I think that's what we're looking at, the right thing. It's just behind your shed,
Just behind the shed, yes. And you can see you're in the country. There's a cricket game going on behind.
There is. So, again, just grab a few of those branches and scratch underneath them to see if they're still green. And...
And report back in a week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see how we're going.
Report back in a week.
And then we might have to quarantine. Which part of the country are you in?
I'm not telling you.
Okay. Do let us know. Lovely to speak with you and thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Now, Malcolm is in Carnarvon. Good morning, Malcolm. What can you tell us?
Good morning. What I'm suggesting... That flower at the end of the banana bunch makes a very nice salad.
Tell me what you do with it. What's your recipe?
You chop it up finely and you mix other, like tomatoes and all that, cucumber, and it's just a nice salad.
Lovely.
Okay.
Thank you very much for that, Malcolm. Yep. That's very good of you to ring in. And if you have a recipe for something that someone's growing in here, I'd love to hear that too. Bruce is in Myalup. He has called in on 1300 222 720, which you too can do. Bruce, what's going on in Myalup?
Well, not a lot in my camp. I don't live amongst people much. I'm out in the bush.
Okay.
But my main thing in worried about at this stage is my scarlet runner beans, the 7-year beans. They're incredibly healthy, flowering profusely, but hardly anything setting.
And when did they start flowering? How long ago was that?
The first flush was a month and a half ago, and I only got 4 beans out of probably 100 flowers. Now there's hundreds of flowers on, and there might be 10 or 12 beans.
Yeah, I think, excuse me, I think there's something to do with the also the night temperature of scarlet beans too. So... besides that really hot day we had on Monday that I wasn't around for, I don't think the night temperatures have been warm enough. So I think they will fruit. So as it starts to warm up now, as we get into Birak, the temperatures rise and also the night temperatures rise. And I think that actually helps with them. So I'll double check, but I don't think there's anything that you need to do. I think it'll just be Mother Nature that will actually get them flowering.
There we go. Okay.
Thank you very much. Yep. That's
enjoy
very
your
good.
Day in Bye. The bush, Bruce. 1-300-222-720 is the number you need to call to access the very knowledgeable mind of Mark Tuchek, who's doing Roots and Shoots with us this morning. Someone has said, you've got to be working bloody hard to kill a Cape lilac.
Yeah.
I agree. Carol now says, same thing happened to my almond tree as Cape lilacs. Flowered beautifully, then green leaves, then 2 to 3 little branches died off quickly, then within weeks all the leaves died and shed. Tree looks dead, ? It should be all new green leaves at this time of year. I am devastated, says Carol.
Yeah.
Diagnosis on the almond tree, Mark.
Well,
Dr. Mark.
Well, sometimes too they can get different kind of fungal rots that kill them over very quickly. Collar rots are an issue with deciduous trees like that, and as soon as they get a wound in their stem, they're actually prone to pest and disease attack. So, yeah, once that happens, unfortunately, there's no return.
So how far up do you go to get collar rot? Like, and what causes it? Tell me what causes it.
Yeah, well, it's usually different factors, so soil or mulch or anything up against the stem, because the barks are designed to resist attack from airborne pests and diseases, and when you cover those up and the bark starts to deteriorate, then it's actually prone to pests and disease getting in it. So it's really just where the bark meets the ground kind of thing. That's where you get collar rot.
Right.
Hmm.
My husband's going to love it when I go home and tell him that. And by love it, I mean hate it and probably ignore me. And it's his tree and it's none of my business. 1-300... Mark's staying very quiet. 1-300-222-720 is the number to call for Roots and Shoots today. Mouse in Mugs says, my jasmine in a hanging basket is dying off. Why? It gets water and sun. So,
ooh,
repot it without seeing it?
Yes. Repotting fixes a lot of things,
it does,
Amber.
It
does. I don't know. Husbands, you can repot
husbands,
them.
I can repot him.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, well, see, hanging baskets are really, because they're up in the air, they are really prone to drying out because the air is just whizzing around them. They dry out really quickly. And even though you water them, you might not be getting the water at the right time. So, you know, there's that point in time where plants have a temporary wilting point. So, you know, when you notice like a gerbera, for example, and it's flopped over and you go, oh, my goodness, I water it, and then it slowly recovers, you know. So that's temporary wilting point.
Temporary wilting point.
Temporary wilting point.
I have one of those at 2 o'clock every afternoon, yes. Someone needs to water me.
There we go. And then you get permanent wilting point. So it reaches that point in time and you can give it a swimming pool full of water after that event.
Gone.
And it's gone. It just continues to go backwards. Plants are wilt differently, so some are more dramatic than others. But big trees, they kind of wilt without you knowing, and then they keel over. You know, some plants that are stressed in summer keel over in winter, and it's because of lack of water. And it's bizarre because it's raining. So, yeah, that stress is
slow response because
It's a big tree, correct.
Big organism. This person said, Mike in Yallingup says, the Cape lilac's dying sounds like dieback from
Phytophthora.
That's the one.
Phytophthora.
Cinnamomy. The weather lately has been warm and wet, perfect for the spread and growth of dieback. I have a few youngish trees and shrubs dying on my property. Shrubs, maybe, huh? Are dying on my property now, and I know there is dieback in the area.
Yeah. Very well could be. I didn't know whether they were prone to that particular disease. I know certainly a lot of our native, you know, Myrtaceae, Banksias and things like that are. It very well could be.
There you go. So diagnostics coming from you guys as well. I love to hear it. 1-300-222-720. Now, Bill says, could you please tell me what's wrong with my magnolia gem? A couple of photos incoming. It's dead. No, it's not. Like, it's got grey woody branches with one leaf on the end of each one by the appearance of it. Would you agree with that description, Mark?
Yes.
That audio description for anyone listening?
It is.
There's another photo there. Yeah, just like leaves on the end of the branches and nothing lower down.
Yeah, so it's very sparse. And where's this located, do you know?
Yeah, Bill doesn't say.
He doesn't say. Because these magnolias, magnolia little gem is very popular. It does require an acidic soil, so it doesn't like coastal planting. And it looks like it's actually been planted too deep. So I don't know if you saw the mulch up against. So that's
cholera.
There we go. Yeah.
Oh, look
so,
at me go.
Yeah, if you go back to that other one.
The other one, yes.
And you can see the mulch is actually quite high against the stem. It's slightly hidden there.
Okay.
But I would dig down and see if you can scrape away some of that mulch. It's going to be a long, slow recovery. Use a slightly acidic fertiliser. One of those seaweed liquid products are very good to help plants that have suffered stress. But, those magnolias like acidic soil.
Okay, sorry, I just trod on your foot, whizzing around the studio. Lynn is in Menora. Good morning to you, Lynn.
Good morning.
What's your question for Mark?
Thanks for taking my call. I've got a 35-year-old Chinese tallow that's growing beautifully, except one branch or a couple of branches now. They're right up the top of the tree. They've got the new growth on them because they're deciduous, but all of the new leaves are falling off. And when they drop to the ground, it's like autumn all over again. They appear to have some sort of disease on them, whether it's a fungus of some sort.
Oh, okay. And so this is just on one branch or on a lot of the tree?
It's probably on one major branch, which has got lots of small branches off it. But it looks like over the last week we've noticed it spreading.
Okay. And, well, they do suffer from a few sap-sucking pests, you know, thrips and things like that too. But you haven't noticed any holes in the stems on that particular branch.
We can't see. It's like we've got a two-story house and it's above the roof height.
Yeah, so you can't actually get up there and see if there's any holes in the stem. Yeah, because usually if it's just one branch on a tree that indicates something wrong with that branch in particular, whether it was an injury, a split, and if that branch is not getting the sap flow, then it's more prone to pest and disease attack. So it could be just getting something like, you know, thrips. Or have you noticed any black on the leaves, like sooty mould?
No.
Does it look black on the leaves?
No.
No,
the leaves are now yellow and they've got green spots both sides. But I do have some magnolias. What are the small magnolias? Port Wine magnolias. Sort of adjacent to it, and I've noticed these black spots appearing on the leaves of those.
Okay.
So I don't know whether that could be coming off the tree. It's a sign of
it could be. You know, if you've got
something related happening.
Yeah, if you've got scale or something like that, which is a sap sucking pest, they produce that sooty mold, that black covering, which kind of drops on the plants and things like that too.
Which it's not like that sort of scale. You can't scrape it off. It's like in the leaf.
Oh, okay. Oh, you might have to send a picture of the leaf in, I think, too. Can you do that?
Okay. Yeah.
There we go, Lynn. Send the pig in and we'll try and address it then. Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ken is in Bunbury. Good morning to you, Ken.
Good morning. Good morning.
What's your question for Mark?
Not a question. It's more some information. Mark, I sent a photograph through of two capsicum plants. I started them in two pots, identical pots with identical soil. One I fed with wine yeast. Every 3 weeks I put a mixture of wine yeast on it. The one that you can see that's twice the size is the one that had the wine yeast.
Ooh.
Wine yeast.
Where do you get your wine yeast from?
What's wine yeast?
Well, yeast, ordinary yeast. Just basic yeast. You can use the yeast that you use to make bread.
So just the stuff you buy from the shops?
Yeah, the stuff you buy from the shops.
Look at that thing go.
I know. It's incredible. I can't believe it. I've actually put it on all my vegetables and they have just gone completely crazy. What I do is I take 2 tablespoons of yeast, 2 tablespoons of sugar, mix that up in a warm water, let it ferment, and then I put it into a 10-litre watering can and then just lightly water every 3 weeks.
Yes, yeah.
The smaller one hasn't had any yeast at all.
So this is a double-blind trial. You're a scientist.
It started a while ago when we had a passion fruit vine that sat dormant for 7 years. And I threw some old yeast out and it just went crazy and produced passion fruit and grew all like crazy. So I thought, I'll do an experiment with vegetables, and that's the result.
Yep. So what's happening is you're actually encouraging those little bioflora microorganisms, which are beneficial. And so it's just like, making a compost tea and inoculating the potting mix with these little microorganisms that help the plant extract fertilizer, and the sugar's fertilizer as well too. So that combination is very good for, inoculating plants to get them going.
Wow.
And I think it's a marvellously cheap way to encourage the growth.
Sure is. And then you can pull some of the soil up and use it in your sourdough. No, that's not a true recommendation. Ken, congratulations on your Triffid, your yeast-fed Triffid. It's an absolute – it's a beast with yeast, isn't it? That's what it is.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, and I just think if other people can use it, it'd be great.
Yeah, good on you. I'll go home. I've got some yeast in the fridge. Thank you, sir. I believe we've got a photo of Lynn's Chinese tallow that's come through. Lynn is back on the line again. Mark is leaning forward. I wish I could I might just get Asha to make that photograph a bit bigger for us if she can.
I see what you...
Just yellow in that patch, isn't
it? I see
it?
What you mean, yeah. It's just that one particular branch that has become stressed.
Well, there's a second one too. There's actually, they run off
two separate branches. That's not it.
There's the leaf. One is the leaves, and there's another of the tree, but there's two main branches that are both looking stressed.
Yes. I wonder if, because you can't actually get up there and see if there's any little holes in that trunk.
Oh, we've got a close-up on the leaves.
Oh, yeah.
Yellow and spotty.
Yeah, okay. So with those leaves, what happens is when the plant's under stress, it'll take nutrients out of some leaves in order to put energy back into the good side. So that's what happens. So those black dots aren't really anything sinister. So it's not sooty mould, which I thought before. But it's just the fact that the plant's under stress and it's just taking the nutrients out and you're just getting a secondary, fungal thing on the leaves. So that's not the reason why that branch has gone like that. So I suspect holes, some kind of borer or something like that, which you can't see because it is a very big tree. So unless you get somebody to climb up there and scout around to see if it's more. I wonder if polyphagus...
was what was running through our minds.
So that could be an issue. And then if you do see those holes, you'll see little sugar secretions that'll scat outside the holes and things like that. But
it's too high up to look, isn't it?
I know. Sometimes
I was checking the website and they got those instructions, but I couldn't get there to look.
You might need an arborist. Big trees like that are worth saving.
We didn't have a prune by it. We usually have it pruned by an arborist. We've had arborists in shaping it. Okay.
You might be able to contact them and get up there and have a look for you.
All right then. Okay, thanks very much.
Good luck with that, Lynn. Thanks for calling in. 1-300-222-720 is the number. 1-300-222-720. Dennis is in Cunderdon. Dennis, what would you like to ask Mark?
G'day, Amber and Mark. I am presently harvesting wheat and I am... got plenty of time to think about gardening questions.
Yes.
Now, we're in Roma, Queensland, in August this year, and the shade trees there, I think they call them leopard bark trees or something similar.
Oh, yes.
And I think the name is Lepidia ferrea or something like that. Excuse my Latin, but that's about the best I could do. The question, Mark, is because they're such a, well, sort of a tropical type tree, will they grow in WA wheat belt? I'm in Cunderdon, so will they grow in wheat belt conditions? As I probably did the wrong seed thing and brought some seeds back with me to try and germinate, but am I wasting my time?
Oh, okay. Yeah, you've got to be careful bringing those seeds back across the border. So I think it used to be called Caesalpinia ferrata. And, yeah, so the bark looks like leopard spots and things like that. They're quite a hardy tree once they get established, and but they do like the warm weather. So up there, do you get, is it in Cunderdon, do you get like frosts at night or in winter?
Can do.
That might set them back when they're young, but if you can get them established, they should push through that. But beautiful trees, lovely yellow flower, and I'd give them a go, but, yeah, don't be bringing seeds across the border.
Ooh, okay.
They were, they might have been in the packet.
Oh, yeah, but still, yeah, you have to be careful. Otherwise, we might get a phone call.
We might. Oh, dear. Okay. Good luck with that, Dennis. Thanks for calling in. 1-300-222-720 is the number for you if you would like to ask Mark a question. This is Sue says, morning, Amber and the lovely man. Sorry, can't remember his name. He is a lovely man. Can you please repeat the yeast recipe and instructions? What did he say?
Oh, he just mixed, I think it was a
yeast,
a cup,
sugar, water.
Yes, yeah. I think it was like a couple of spoons full of each. Then put it in a 10-litre watering barrel,
yeah,
and then watered after that.
Yeah, I wonder, did he let it fizz up a little bit?
Just let it ferment a bit. Mm.
And another suggestion from a helpful member in the audience, a good quality pocket camera drone would be a safe way to inspect the high branches of a large tree. Yeah.
Yes,
agree. Mm. Then another yeast suggestion, plus one yeast. I put my sourdough starter discard onto my chilies and whatnot. I water it down before tipping it on and they go bloody well, says this person. My theory is microbes help break down and open up nutrients for the plants, much the same as they do for us in our gut. We are scientists. We are gardeners. We are local heroes.
It's true. All of that is correct. So,
all of that is true. That's a really good idea because it's sort of it's a bit onerous what to do with your sourdough discard because there can be a lot of it if you're being a responsible sourdough starter owner. Fantastic show today. Listen every week. Well done. Thank you. Now talking about it. I don't know. Maybe that text message dropped out halfway through. Are inebriated caterpillars a problem? I don't know.
Inebriated?
Have they been on the grapes?
They might have been.
I don't know why this is a question or from whom. Could we have some more information, please? What have you been doing to your caterpillars? Feeding them beer?
Maybe. With yeast. I know lots of things get drunk.
Oh,
on fermented fruit, you know,
yes.
Animals, people included.
Raccoons breaking into shops.
Mark, I saw that
did you
too.
See that was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Absolutely face down in the loo. We've all been there, haven't we, when we were younger.
It was a funny photo.
I do remember calling for my mum when I was about 21. Please recommend a hedging tree or species up to 5 metres for woodlands in Perth that is bird and bee attracting, asks Brian.
Oh, 5 metres?
Hedging.
Yep. So you want to trim it. There's a nice syzygium, which is also another name for lily pilly. And you want to get the one that is psyllid resistant, you know. So there's one called Tuckerbush cherry. It gets up to 4 metres, so that's pretty close. And easily trimmed, but it doesn't get that psyllid, so that doesn't affect the branches. Woodlands. You can get, there's lots of viburnums out there, very popular, green leaves, white flowers, and they're a good hedging and trimming plant.
Bay? So,
bay leaves.
Too big?
Can be used. They're a bit slower growing, so you'd probably want to use something a bit quick if you want to screen the neighbours pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
5 metres is big, isn't it?
It's pretty big, yeah.
Yeah. Bird and bee attracting.
Yeah, bays not so much, you know. Yeah, but
the scissor gem is going to get that fruit and that spring flower. Is that right?
It is. And even the viburnums, they have lovely white flowers which are attractive to bees. So that's a winner. Yep.
John asks if he's a local hero or a local weirdo. John, I reckon you might know more about that than I do. I'm going to call you a hero because I can hand out these awards. I have a Wollemi pine that should have been transplanted ages ago. It has to be in a pot. Would it be okay to do it now or should I wait until autumn, says Mary in Toudier.
Yes, you can do it now. Wollemi pines will grow quite well. They just protect it from the afternoon sun here in Perth. So repot it into an Australian premium potting mix and the next size up is good and it'll be fine to do now.
There you go. And further to the yeast recipe, someone says, I think it was 2 tablespoons of yeast and 2 tablespoons of sugar mixed in 10 litres of water. Confirmation will be great.
That sounds right to me.
Sounds right to you. And I reckon it's probably one of those things that, you know, is loose enough that, you know, is going to be okay. Like you just wouldn't want to drown it. Oh, Mark is showing me the plant of the year. It is a stunner.
That's the precious pearl gum tree that we talked about. So that was a winner. And out of the the top 5 winners, 3 of them were natives.
Mm-hmm.
There was this one called Nandina Magical Lemon and Lime, which was an exotic plant. So most Nandinas tend to come out with red foliage, but this one was a yellow and green form.
It's gorgeous.
And this is Adrian from Helix Australia, and he won a commendation for his Geltham wax. It's a chamelorsium called Pinnacle Pink, and it comes out with white flowers, and they actually they turn pinkish with age, and so that's a nice native plant. The other one was a winner was a Chrysocephalum, which is what do they call these things, like buttons, ground cover plants.
Oh yeah.
And it was a bit straggly. I didn't like it so much, but excuse me,
Mark.
But it was
controversial.
Good. I know.
I'm impressed. You're allowed to come out and say you don't like something. Alice is in Lathlane. Good morning to you, Alice.
Good morning, everyone. I had a quick question regarding the mixture in the Vegemite jar of kerosene versus blackberry killer. I couldn't remember which was what the formula was to kill off. There's glory vine, we've got some ivy and some other nasty bits growing everywhere.
Sabrina fairly regularly gives out this recipe. It might not be in your family recipe book, Mark.
No, it's not.
I couldn't remember if it was 3/4, which one.
Oh, we'll have to. Maybe Sabrina's got that on her website.
That's a great tip. We'll have to ask Sabrina when she's back.
Okay,
sorry that we can't answer that, Alice, but good on you for calling in. 1-300-222-720. Mark's just going to die. He's just trying to have a quiet little sip of water over there and choking. Let me put your mic back on. Steve is in Fremantle. Steve, what would you like to ask Mark?
Yes, good morning. Whenever I have pig face and I get it growing successfully, after a while it starts developing little white fluffy growths and it starts basically killing the pig face.
Okay. That is cottony cushion scale, which pig face are prone to, and it is difficult to control because, you know, you'd want to use like an oil with neem in it or something like that, but you can't use it when it gets very hot. So over 30 degrees, you end up running the risk of burning your pig face using the stuff that'll kill off the cottony cushion scale. Generally, if you're vigilant, you can chop off those branches before they start to spread, but when it spreads through your whole plant, it'll die off a natural death, but then it'll come back eventually. But
okay.
It'll look pretty bad for a while.
All right. Thanks very much.
No worries.
Good luck with that, Steve. Let us know how you go. Straight from Dr. Google, DIY yeast tonic recipe fermented. This method activates beneficial microbes in the soil, promoting root development and nutrient uptake. One, activate yeast. Mix 1 tablespoon of active dry yeast and 1 tablespoon of sugar into 1 litre of warm, not hot, water. Two, ferment. So let it sit 24 to 48 hours until bubbly and foamy. Three, dilute. Mix 1 part of this fermented liquid with 10 parts fresh water, e.g., the text machine just bounced out of my way, e.g., 1 cup of mix to 10 cups of water. Four, apply water plants at the base every 2 weeks during the growing season. So there you go. You can find it on the Dr. Google, the Dr. Popular Search Engine. I was not promoting that juggernaut of Death Star, awful algorithm, black box. Maria has come to the party with the Blackberry Killer and says 40% Blackberry Killer and 60% kerosene. I heard someone called their child kerosene. Kerosene. I don't know if that's a true story. Roots and Shoots, Sabrina's Tree Killer Recipe, another confirmation of this, 60% Caro, 40% Blackberry Killer. And I'm just trying to find a question here. Lots of beautiful answers. People are so helpful, Mark.
They are. We've got a nice,
now, this
nice
is
crowd.
A really good question from Helen. Why do we repot constantly, i.e. sizing up each time? Is there a reason we can't pot straight into the largest pot first time? Good question.
We can, but it depends on smaller plants usually don't get their roots into the whole potting mix volume in that quickly. And by the time they do that, the potting mix deteriorates, because it's too wet, before the roots get in there. But, you know, once you get a pot, you keep bonsai in the same pot for hundreds of years, you know. So if you get the right combination and then you're off to the races. But repotting does help revitalize plants because if you can imagine the roots are just contained and you can actually take it out of the pot, even root prune some plants, put some fresh potting mix in the bottom and stick it back in the same pot, and that'll help revitalise plants as well too. So a few different ways you can go, but you don't have to go into it. You shouldn't always go into a big pot straight away with a very small plant.
Right. I realise every time this question comes up every week, I go home feeling very guilty about my aspidistras, which are in dire need of moving on to bigger pots. But they are so cast iron plant is the common name, isn't it?
It is. They're very tough.
Yeah, they're very, very, very tough. Maureen is in Canningvale. Good morning, Maureen. What would you like to ask Mark?
Hi, Mark. I'd just like to – we bought a dwarf avocado plant from the big famous garden centre here, and just wanted to know – we planted it in the ground, but it's – the leaves are dying, the top leaves, like they've gone all brown. I think we planted just the weekend, and on the Monday we had a really hot day.
Right.
So what can we do to protect it and help it to live?
Yes, so it's obviously suffered a bit of stress. I think a lot of people suffered a bit of stress on that day.
Yep.
But, so those brown leaves won't recover. So you just really want to keep the plant damp. Certainly don't fertilise it with anything because it's suffered stress, so fertilising it will stress it out further.
Yeah.
A weak strength of yeast and sugar compost tea would be very beneficial in this instance. Beer.
Plant beer.
Plant beer. And that's all you need to do, just keep it damp, and then hopefully those new leaves that come out the middle should recover. And those old leaves will eventually just drop off.
Okay, so it's yeast. Sorry, what's the combination? Yeast and?
Let me read this out to you. It's a little complex. So take 1 tablespoon of active dry yeast. That's the stuff you buy in the baking section at the supermarket. 1 tablespoon of sugar into 1 litre of warm water. Stir that around. Let it sit for 28 to 48 hours until bubbly and foamy. Then dilute that with 1 cup of that fermented liquid with 10 parts fresh water. And then apply that to the base of your plant and water that base every 2 weeks during the growing season. So today has been the day of feeding your plants with yeast, microbes.
Oh, okay.
Good luck with that, Maureen.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Kate is in Scarborough. Good morning to you, Kate.
Good morning. How are we all?
Very good.
That's good to hear. Yeah, I'm ringing about my wisteria. I'm on a mission to grow one of these. I've never grown one before. I've got it in the ground. It took off quite well, but it seems to have slowed down. But now I see at the edge of the leaves, it's like a bit of brown. Not much, just more at the tips. Small little bit of brownness. So I'm just wondering, does it need some nutrients or am I not watering it enough? Or why is it having that kind of brown tip?
Well, young plants, you know, they do take off quickly because you've got some good soil going, a bit of water. But now we're getting into the business end of our summer. So brown tips can indicate a bit of stress again. And yeah. So I just keep the water up to it. So it has suffered a bit of stress. But eventually, wisterias, as they get older, they get better, they get hardier, then kind of nothing kills them. So...
good to hear.
But yeah, just young plants just need a bit more love and attention. So,
yeah, can I just ask you one more question about the wetter soil granules? Because I have been doing that, spreading them around just to kind of increase that kind of moisture in the ground. But I've killed my beautiful passion fruit by doing that because I put some, it was in a pot and then it just soaked up all these wetter soil granules, but there was no drainage in the pot, so it just drowned basically. So with the wisteria, do you think it would be good to put some wetter soil around that or like the granules, or do you not think the granules are good?
Okay.
To use the liquid.
Were these actually wetter soil granules, not crystals? You didn't use crystals.
Yeah, they were crystals.
Okay. So you have to be very careful with those crystals in a pot because you put them in there, you add water and they expand and they just turn into like jelly. And in a pot, yeah, you run the risk of overwatering them, funny enough. So the crystals are best in the ground, but you're just going to remember too that they need rehydrating. They're only good when they've actually got when they're hydrated and they've actually expanded and got water in them. But
okay.
A wetting agent is different. Wetting agents help the water penetrate, whereas those water crystals help retain moisture. So it's a bit different.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, thank you for your help. That explains a lot. Thanks a million. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Kate. We have a special caller now. It's Gardening Australia's very own Costa Georgiadis. Good morning to you, Costa.
Well, greetings to you on the far side over there. I'm coming to you from Mildura. You can hear the local music playing. It's the 20th birthday of the Sunraysia Farmers, Growers and Makers Market, and it is going off.
It
is Pied Piper of children here. I'm doing nature art. I'm doing flower crowns. The kids are going ballistic. And then this big mini tornado blew in and there was stuff blowing everywhere, but all part of the ephemeral fun.
Nice.
Are you on your way to Perth this weekend?
I am on my way to Perth tonight, and I cannot wait. Number 4 of the annual Kalamunda Garden events. And, you know, it's pretty for all the events that I do, it's unique. It's really nationally significant because to run it once a season just really connects everyone to the nuances and differences that come with growing so that they can see, you know, from the amazing growers that come and share their plants with everyone and their knowledge. It's great to have this outlet where people can be there in winter and what's growing in winter, what's growing in spring, what should I be doing in autumn, and what about summer, heading into summer. All the talks and workshops help people get prepared. So yeah, I'd do anything to make it to all 4 of them, but it doesn't always work.
Oh, well, you're a busy man, Costa, so we're grateful that you do come over for these shows. And it's a great community garden show, you know. It's a great atmosphere, and you're a big fan of community, I know. And, it'll be great to see you tomorrow.
It is extraordinary. I feel, even though I have zero right to feel proud because I'm not involved and I've done nothing to contribute to it, when you were talking about that we're unique in Australia, that the only one to do it seasonally, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
It really does. And it's also a reflection of the genuine commitment that Mandy and and Andrew put in, because, you know, people do an event a year and that's a risk. You know, you've seen the weather that's hit them, and, you know, and that knocks things around, but they keep coming back and backing the industry, the green life industry, backing all the growers and backing the gardeners and saying, well, let's get good stuff in front of you so that you can learn and become as resilient as the growers are in challenging times weather-wise.
This familiar voice you're listening to is Costa Georgiadis, who's heading into Perth tonight for the Kalamunda Garden Festival. Event number 4, Costa, what happens at event number 4?
Well, you only need to look at the lineup of speakers and you realise just the gravity and the magnetism that the event is building over so many years now. Like, you've got David Holmgren and Sue Dennett, he's the co-founder of Permaculture. He's coming to speak. Hannah Maloney's coming. Charlie and the band will be there, Formidable Veg, and illustrator Brenna Quinlan. Like, she's making such a wave in terms of illustrating environmental realities through illustration. She's going to be there. And, of course, Mark, you're there. Faye Caro's there. All the local specialists sharing that knowledge that, you know, us Eastsiders, we can't speak out of line. You know, your local speakers can really lay out the local conditions much better than we can. And
I don't think you'll ever speak out of line, Costa.
What are you speaking about, Costa?
A couple of different topics. So, I mean, I'm doing a panel discussion with Brenna and Hannah about great projects that we're seeing around the country. So I've got plenty that I can share there. I'm doing a talk on big spaces. Small spaces, big ideas.
That's my head, Costa. You just described my head.
Mashed potato, Greek salad. I think everyone heard what my intent was there. And then I'm doing another one on container growing and just growing in what you have.
Nice.
And repurposing and reusing and circularity.
Beautiful. You are such a warrior for what goes on in our backyards, Costa. And I think, you know, at a time when geopolitics is just a bloody nightmare, to just head out to your backyard and show some love to your garden is restorative, isn't it?
It is.
It really is. I mean, we are nature.
We are nature. And I'm going to rename this show Big Spaces, Small Ideas.
you got that? I sign it over. It's all yours.
So lovely to speak to you, and I wish I was coming tomorrow. Thanks, Costa.
Thanks for ringing in, Costa.
No worries. See you around tomorrow.
Bye.
Couple more questions to answer for our gorgeous audience. What if you planted it into the ground? Wouldn't that be like a really big pot? Repot, says Andrea in Peppermint Grove, just off the back of Helen asking, why do we constantly have to repot?
Well, if you don't have the space, then keeping it in a pot's beneficial. But putting in the ground, if you've got the room, great. But you certainly don't want to sink a pot in the ground.
You don't want to do that?
No, because what happens is those drainage holes block up underneath the soil. And, you know, sometimes I've seen people do that with plants with like ficus that have got roots that spread out very far. But eventually those drainage holes block up and it's the death of the plant. So never sink a pot in the ground.
Okay, somebody did come in with an Aspidistra question. Joe in Duncraig says, am I able to dig up Aspidistras in the garden and plant in pots for the veranda?
Yes, very easily.
I would have said a hard yes to that.
Yep, take a sharp spade and just put it through the middle and they'll transplant very easily.
Mine are all in pots because they're on the perimeter of the yard and there have been various pet dogs storming through those places. And so when the Aspidistras were in the ground, they really suffered. Oh. But just lifting them up in the pots. And they're just they're a most extraordinary plant, aren't they? How can I incorporate homemade compost into wine barrels with well-established fruit trees? One has got a fig, one a mango, one a pomegranate, and one a kumquat. They've been in the pots for at least 5 years. I rent, so I don't want to plant them in the ground, says Andy in Mosman Park.
Yeah, so you don't want to use compost in a pot.
Yeah.
Compost in the ground is fantastic, but compost in a pot will deteriorate that potting mix. And using a little bit of, you know, that yeast brew in a pot is beneficial, but compost itself, not so good.
Oh, thanks so much, Mark Tuchek, for coming in and holding the fort. It is 10 o'clock. Thanks for your company.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.